Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with senior editor Mike Wilkening and our entire Pro Football Weekly editorial department, it's our pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL before they happen.
We give you the latest on the NFL CBA talks, plus we take a look at some teams with some key free agency decisions.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, and welcome everybody to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, and my co-host this week is our senior editor, Mike Wilkening. We will be joined as well by the entire Pro Football Weekly editorial department, or at least those on duty. We've got a couple out on summer vacation, but we do have the entire NFL covered for you again this week, and we will start, as has been our wont the last few weeks, in bringing you up to date on everything there is to know about the labor impasse and what the hopes and aspirations, how positive, how negative things are. Is there going to be a deal shortly? And guys, I think we have to start there. And I'm curious to hear what each of you have to say, because according to my sources, there is not going to be a deal in the immediate future. There is going to be a deal. There is going to be a football season. But everything I'm hearing is that the best we can hope for right now is probably in a window somewhere around July 20th to August 1st, maybe even that first week in August, that probably the players are going to end up with two preseason games instead of four this year, and that everything will flow from that. But before we can even get to that, there has to be some agreement on the economic issues. And even though you keep hearing all these positive momentum statements coming out of these secret negotiations, and then the propaganda work that was done by the owners after their meetings in Rosemont, Illinois last week about this great new offer, except the players hadn't seen it yet, and obviously D. Smith wasn't overly impressed by it, because he followed 2 days later with a conference call to his player reps, letting him know that a deal was not imminent. What you have is hope, because there's talks. You have a budding new relationship between D. Smith and Roger Goodell. But Dan, I'll start with you first as the senior member of our panel. What you don't have, as near as we can tell, is any new agreement on the key economic issues.
No, there's just so much that still needs to be done. But you just have to look at the fact that they are definitely, for the most part, really making a concerted effort to work on this. These meetings, the latest ones up in Minneapolis, pretty much with Smith and Goodell and the attorneys, just kind of, I think at maybe this point, really getting down and dirty on these key economic issues that we don't really know a lot about. I mean, it really does seem like they're not that off on reaching some kind of common ground. And I really think that it is a good sign that you've got Demiroir Smith and Roger Goodell showing up at this rookie symposium together. Certainly it shows a good sign there. What they didn't say is the 100 rookies that didn't show up to this thing, which was a very important function, that basically just kind of, you know, is part of this collateral damage that we've seen.
Well, and it's interesting, and forgive me, I realize I introduced my co-host Mike Wilkening, but also with us in this segment, that was our executive editor Dan Arkish, associate editor Kevin Fishbane is alongside as well. And, Kevin, the other piece of what Dan just mentioned, not only 100 rookies not showing up, that's because it's an NFLPA event this year. It is normally an NFL event, and it is mandatory. The rookies have to be there if they were drafted or if they are priority free agents who have been signed. And that's another thing that is being lost in this strange offseason of our discontent.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, the NFL called it the first event lost to the lockout, but we all know, those of us that cover the league, that March, April, May, there could have been a lot of other things we could be doing as opposed to, you know, following these guys into courtrooms and negotiating rooms. And Hub, when you talk about how long it's going to take, I think a lot of people forget that this is a collective bargaining agreement. Is not a, you know, two-page file that everyone just signs and we can have a season. I mean, it's a big thing that they have to come up with. The framework needs to be agreed upon. The courts have to approve it. The union has to recertify. They have to explain to the teams the rules of the new CBA. There's a lot that still has to get done, and there still is always that chance that they hit a snag. And I thought you made a great point. The owners, you know, they were so excited last week, but we didn't hear anything from D. Smith. That was just the owner's point of view. So there's a long way to go, and the thing that really is upsetting is that they couldn't start these secret meetings earlier. And I think we all know why. We all know they tried to get their leverage in court, and that's what they'll blame each other if anyone asks. But the fact of the matter is they didn't do this in March, April, and May. No progress was made in those 3 months. The progress started being made in June.
Well, and Wilkie, I couldn't agree with Kevin more in what he just said, and a lot of that has come in the last couple of weeks since Judge Kermit Bai of the 8th Appellate Court in St. Louis warned both sides at the end of the hearing on whether or not Judge Nelson's injunction lifting the lockout should be honored or it should be stayed or knocked down permanently. He warned both sides from the bench that they better be careful or that three-judge panel was going to come up with a ruling that neither side was going to like. That's what has incented these two sides to talk and be civil. It's not as if they've had some sudden breakthrough or compromise in the agreement itself. We've only got about 30 seconds. We're going to take a break, but we're going to continue this conversation. But before we get to the break, Mike, I think it is nice that Dee Smith and Roger Goodell shared an airplane. I think it is important that dialogue between those two be there. But I think it's also fair to continue to question how strong a following they actually have from their constituencies. I don't think the owners are going to sign a deal just because Roger Goodell says so. And I think Dee Smith has lost some street cred with some of the players.
Really, the fact that we have two new leaders on both sides just further adds to the complexity of this, Hub. Two guys, this is their first time through in these negotiations, and it's been a complex and contentious set of negotiations. It just kind of adds to the various layers of the story as we go further into the summer.
Well, and guys, as we go to this break, Dan Arkish, who's our executive editor with us on this panel, made a point last week. Kevin's right. Why did it take 3 months? But here's another point. Even today, why are they meeting 2 or 3 days a week? Why aren't they locked in a room 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, until they get a deal done? Think about that one for just a moment. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll have more with the Pro Football Weekly editorial staff on the labor impasse in just a moment. We roll on with Pro Football Weekly on the radio and a lot more talk about what the current status of the NFL's labor impasse is. I am joined in this segment by executive editor Dan Arkish, by our senior editor Mike Wilkening, who's also co-hosting with me on the program this week, and associate editor Kevin Fishbane. And you know, we were talking just before the break. Kevin made such a great point about why did it take 3 months to get serious. And then Dan, you made a point during the show last week of, well, if you are serious, why are you only serious about 6 to 8 hours a day, 2 or 3 days a week? And again, Dan, this is what tells me they're not close, because if they were, then you'd have the impetus, the momentum to stay at the table and hammer it out. They continue to go back and forth. They may be taking baby steps, but until these guys get serious and lock the doors and stay in the room, what makes us think we're going to get a deal?
Yep, you're exactly right, Hub. It's very frustrating. You know, the clock is ticking. You really want everything to kind of go on the way it usually does, but the way I see it, you really have to have a deal in place, an agreement in principle, at least I would think by the 9th or 10th of July. Other than that, you know, you're going to have training camps modified, probably preseason modified, and what you said a little bit before about probably having an abbreviated preseason at best, and maybe this thing going into maybe early August, it could be the thing that's happening.
Well, and I suspect strongly, guys, because I know they've also already started talking about what they do as a game plan once they have a deal. I think it's already been agreed that part of the preseason is going to be gone, because you've got players tremendously worried about having had no organized off-season workout programs. Forget the OTAs. The organized workout programs with your teammates, with the trainers. Guys are not in game shape. And so that's going to be a real concern at whatever point this thing gets settled. But, Wilkie, I want to come back to you. The owners purposely leaked some information out of their last meetings in Rosemont, Illinois, and they talked about this plan they're considering where they'll give up their billion-dollar credit off the top, and they will give the players, we're not sure what it is, somewhere between 48% and 50% of all revenue. Then they did say there'll be a few expense credits to put money away for stadium building and other things, but they didn't tell us what those were. And then they talked about a few other points. The bottom line is, if you've been listening for the last 3 years, the players claimed that what they were getting was 59% of designated revenues, which was after the billion-dollar credit, and 50% of all revenue. And so if what the owners are actually offering is somewhere between 1% and 2% less that the players would take, it makes no sense. Why did the players, the owners, I should say, plot for 3 years to have this lockout, and suddenly they're going to give the players, you know, all but 1 or 2 points of what they had before? There's something the owners didn't tell us about that deal, and I think that's why Dee Smith immediately had to let the players know we're no closer than we thought we were.
Yeah, that's why everybody wants to see what the final agreement actually ends up being and what both sides agree upon. with regards to how the revenue is divided up, because you do bring up a good point with regards to what the meaning of that close to 60% percentage of revenue number that's been thrown around for years. You're right. It did have that takeout of the billion off the top. So these are all issues that have to be sorted out. And you're right. If the owners, you know, who wins this negotiation? It was pretty much clear that the players got a pretty good deal in the last set, and it's always been assumed that the owners wouldn't give in much in this set of negotiations. It'll be very interesting to see what happens, to see how this pie is divided up.
Well, and Kevin, there is one thing I think we can say we've learned in the last month or two, which is that everybody thought the initial focus last January, February, March was the owners wanting a second $1 billion off the top, and then they supposedly negotiated that down to an extra 625, an extra 325 million. Then they gave it all up. And what we've learned is that's not what they ever really wanted. What the owners are focused on is limiting the amount of sharing that the players do at all in any increased revenues in the out years of this deal. And I think as you read the tea leaves, that's probably where the real negotiating is going on right now. How much are the players willing to be capped in future years, and how much future revenue growth are they willing not to participate in?
Yeah, when you look at the projections by 2016, you look at the billions of dollars that are going to come in, and this, you know, the idea of a Thursday night TV package coming in 2012, which is going to get them even more money. The players are well aware of what these profits are going to do and what it could do for them. And D. Smith obviously is aware of that, and they've made it very clear that they're, you know, they want a good deal for them as well. And I think that the problem that you're going to get there is, they're going to get to this impasse, and the owners are going to be willing to skip games. We've said this all along. You know, they have a lot. You know, the players are the ones that are missing the game checks. So when you think about the revenue split in that essence, what you just explained, then you're going to have some more problems, because the players know this, and they want a good deal for them.
All right, guys, we are going to continue to talk NFL, but we're going to move away from the labor impasse. We're going to check in with Dan on a couple of his teams in just a moment. Kevin will be back as well. It's late, the week before the 4th of July. No deal imminent. We'll talk NFL way we hear it in just a moment. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor. My co-host this week is our senior editor, Mike Wilkening, and we are joined in this segment by executive editor Dan Arkish. Dan's actually been at it a little bit longer than any of us. And, Dan, a couple of your ball clubs, even though, again, we have this labor impasse, we have found interesting stories as we try and keep up with players around the league. And you had a chance to talk to A.J. Hawk, the Green Bay Packers Super Bowl champion, Green Bay Packers linebacker, who's had an eventful offseason. He got cut. He got re-signed before the lockout started. He's had wrist surgery. Now he says he's ready to go. And apparently he told you, and I'm going to paraphrase here, that he thinks that these players-only workouts, to some extent, are much ado about nothing.
Well, yeah, the thing that he seemed to indicate is and everybody, you know, kind of figured this out already, of all the teams that are in the best of shape, you know, to get back up to speed quickly, it's got to be the Packers. They're just so stable right now, Hub, you know, with their coaching staff, with their systems, everybody really getting a good grip. And so, you know, because they are so stable, unlike so many of these other teams, they're in good shape, and they have guys, you know, small bunches of guys that have gotten together. But, yes, A.J. Hawk doesn't think it has been that big a deal, but certainly training camp, you know, they want to have full force.
And Dan Hawk is an interesting example of a lot of what the dangers of this lockout could represent, at least to the 2011 season. And I should clarify, I said he was cut, he was re-signed. The Packers had to get out from the remainder of a bad contract, so they released him and then signed a new contract that obviously Hawk is happy with, or he wouldn't have signed it. But what's really interesting is here's a guy who had wrist surgery in February. He has not been able to see or rehab with the team doctors or trainers. He's at a golf tournament, and he says, quote, "It feels pretty good, although I can't swing as hard as I would like," close quote. Well, if he can't swing a golf club as hard as he would like, pretty safe to say that this guy's not ready to play football.
Well, he seems to think that by the time training camp rolls around, he will be ready to do it. And, you know, maybe A.J. was saying he can't swing as hard as he would like because he was just wanting to be careful and not really just bust loose to really cut loose with a big drive. What's interesting is he actually won the longest drive contest, and he doesn't play golf all that much 3 years ago. So he can boom it.
Wow, that's pretty good. I don't play golf all that much either, and I swing and miss more often than not. So, Wilkie, I want to talk to you about one of your clubs, the Detroit Lions, and you also were able to track down an NFL player this week. Had a conversation with backup quarterback Drew Stanton, and Stanton in an interesting spot because he performed a little bit last year before he got hurt when Matt Stafford went down. And played, I think you could say, a little better than some people expected, although certainly didn't indicate to anybody that he might be competing for a starting job with Matt Stafford. He is a player who, assuming that the new free agency rules will go back to 4 years unrestricted free agent, which we know they will, would have a choice, and yet he's not sure as to what he wants to do.
Right. I asked him about his free agent status, and he really said he hasn't given it a ton of thought, you know, just something that is yet to be played out. Now, if he is able to test free agency, he will, certainly. He told me as much. But he also said he's quote, comfortable with re-signing with Detroit, if that's something that eventually happens to him. So, I mean, he is a guy that, you know, potentially may be a better opportunity in terms of moving up to another backup spot or getting some more of a shot at playing time, could be open to him if indeed the free agency rules go back to the way they were in 2009, which means 4 years an expired contract, you're able to hit unrestricted free agency. So he's one of many players that are sort of in limbo at this point.
Dan, the Seattle Seahawks, one of your clubs out in the AFC West, a surprising 7-9 playoff team. It almost never happens. And then they pull off the big upset and knock the Saints out in the first round. One of the problems they had all year that made them a sub-500 club was on defense, and particularly on defensive line, where they had an unbelievable rash of injuries. And yet what you're hearing is that maybe as big a concern as getting healthy on the D-line is getting their 2009 first-round draft pick, I believe number 4 overall, Aaron Curry, playing up to the potential that they saw for him when they invested that pick in him.
Absolutely, Hub. This is a guy that really, I think, has to step it up big time. You know, the 4th overall pick has to be more than a 2-down player, which is basically what he's become. He's actually very good against the run, but, you know, he's playing that strong side position. Normally your playmaking linebacker's on the weak side. He just hasn't made enough plays. No interceptions, no fumble recoveries yet, only 5.5 sacks in 2 years. Got to get more out of this guy.
And what's really interesting, Dan, is Lofatutupo is a pretty well-known quantity in the middle, but David Hawthorne is one of the most underrated players in the league, and he's actually been more valuable on the other side than Curry's been.
Yeah, I'd say right now, I mean, most people that watch this team closely would have to say that Curry's the third best, and there's even a reserve, Will Herring, who's pretty darn good, too. So they really need Aaron Curry to live up to that first-round billing.
All right, Dan, thank you much. We appreciate your contributions this week. We're going to cut you loose. Wilkie is going to stay with me. We're going to be rejoined by Kevin Fishbane in a moment. We'll talk a little AFC East, specifically the Jets and the Buffalo Bills in just a moment. We are, and we are going around the NFL with the latest way we hear it. The players are out there. They're a little harder to find, but there's lots going on, and we're trying to keep you up to speed each week as we wait for the labor impasse to sort itself out. We talked about that in our first two segments with Mike Wilkening and Dan Arkish and Kevin Fishbane. And Kevin, our associate editor, rejoins us now to talk about a couple of his ball clubs. And the Buffalo Bills, kind of an interesting beat. You know, Kevin, they actually, before I even get to the subject of our conversation, they played pretty good football the second half of the season. You know, I think that they got out, I forget, like 0-5, 0-6, and even though they didn't end up winning a ton of games, they were a lot more competitive the second half of the season than they were the first half.
Yeah, and they were fun to watch, too. I mean, the offense was pretty explosive at times. They took the Ravens, the Chiefs, in overtime in those games. They put up 30 points against the Patriots. So, I mean, yeah, that's all you can ask for, especially with the way they started. They were very competitive with some pretty good teams.
Now, we've been hearing most of the offseason that once this thing's worked out, that the Bills' top free agent priority could probably be safety Dante Whitner. He's a guy who's probably just a notch below a Pro Bowl-type safety. And yet, Paul Posluszny, who was a first-round pick coming out of Penn State, did he fall into the second round? I remember he had the broken arm early. I believe he went late in the first round. Was supposed to be the leader of this defense for some time to come. He is a very productive guy. He's never been the impact guy that they hoped he would be, and that you're hearing that in this 3-4 system, they may even be more focused on getting him re-signed than Whitner?
Yeah, I mean, they really like him on and off the field. He's a leader in the locker room. You know, he's good with the media. He's a blue-collar guy from around the Pittsburgh area, and you know, the Buffalo setting kind of fits him well. And with Whitner, you know, the secondary is the team's strongest unit in that defense, and they drafted Denora Searcy, who could fill in at Whitner's position. And Whitner's been a good player, and he's got a lot of talent, but he has not played up to his draft position. And I think the Bills would like to keep him as well, but I think Posluszny might be first. As you said, he gets a lot of tackles. He might not force fumbles or get sacks, but right in the middle of that 3-4, you know, he definitely fits in well in Buffalo.
You know, Mike, what's interesting about all this free agency conversation is people forget that 2010 was kind of an island in this collective bargaining agreement that you needed 6 years of service to be unrestricted. The reality is that the heart of this CBA that has now expired was that you were unrestricted after 4 years. And one thing that we know, and we've now started to hear rumblings about it, there's no way the players are going to agree to a new long-term CBA that doesn't get them back to unrestricted after 4 years. And you look at one of your teams, the Baltimore Ravens, at the end of the season last year, they were talking about some of their bigger name free agents. But the reality is, assuming that they're free after 4 years, you've now got players like offensive tackle Jared Gaither, fullback LaRon McClain, cornerback Josh Wilson, swing guy, offensive guard and tackle Marshall Yanda. These are all guys that the Ravens have got to take care of, and to lose one or two might be okay, but as a group, they cannot afford to lose them all, or they'll be focused on plugging too many holes in the dike.
Right, and this is a team that does have some needs. The pass rush, I think, is a particular need for them, and you know, they're going to have to go into outside free agency anyways and address some needs. And they've also, again, got these four guys that are all would-be free agents if they go back to the system that they used 2009 and before. So of that group, Yanda's the guy that probably makes the most sense as being the highest priority for them. He can play multiple positions, has played well, played right tackle last year, can also play right guard. Jared Gaither's a guy that didn't play last year, but is a left tackle and, you know, is, I think, a pretty well-regarded player and probably will draw some interest elsewhere. So it's going to be interesting to see what plays out with him. You know, with regards to McClain and Josh Wilson, it's going to be very interesting, too. I think price and opportunity that they'll get elsewhere, I think, could maybe be a big part of what happens with regards to their futures in Baltimore.
Kevin, one of your clubs, the New York Jets, and you know, there's no argument that the Jets pulled off the biggest upset of the season last year in knocking off the Patriots in the divisional playoffs, and they were in the AFC title game. I was actually on the sidelines for Westwood One Radio in that game, and I maintained that if they hadn't been so exhausted and if they had showed up in the first half and played the way they did in the second half, they might have gotten to a Super Bowl. And yet they're a team with tremendous issues in free agency, and even more than that, I just continue to wonder about Mark Sanchez. I mean, he's their franchise quarterback. He's never performed like one. And particularly when it comes to the red zone offense, they were just 24th in the league this past season. And so you're hearing that Rex Ryan, when he's not giving out good sound bites, has reached out to a pretty reputable offensive mind to try and fix those issues.
Yeah, Hub, earlier this offseason, Rex Ryan said that Tom Moore, the former Colts offensive coordinator, came in and spoke with the Jets coaches about how to be more efficient in the red zone. As you mentioned, Mark Sanchez threw for 166 yards in the red zone. That was 24th in the league. And granted, you have guys like LT and Sean Green and a great offensive line that you maybe don't need to rely on Sanchez's arm so much, but when teams are going to bottle up the run and you have talented tight end and Dustin Keller, and depending on the free agency, probably some pretty good receivers too, if Sanchez can get to the point where he can engineer the offense in the red zone like Manning does in Indianapolis, obviously you don't want to compare the two, but just to have some more confidence and have some more plays that would, you know, again, better the Jets in the red zone, score some more points. I mean, now you're talking about a team that Rex Ryan's talked about for years as a Super Bowl team.
Kevin, real quickly, I know you also had a chance to talk to Brad Smith last week, the Jets slash quarterback, number three or four wide receiver, their outstanding kickoff returner, a free agent this year, and difficult to make a priority with Santonio and Holmes and Braylon Edwards ahead of them, also free agents. Do you think he wants to stay a Jet? I mean, what was your take from the tone of the conversation?
He likes the Jets. I mean, he went to the workouts, and he told me it was awkward, but he still went to their Jets players' organized workouts, so it tells you how much he likes his teammates. But of all the guys I talked to, he seemed the most resigned to, you know, searching to find another option somewhere else. I think he knows that where he falls on the priority list. And, you know, as we've said before, the Jets also got to pay David Harris. They got to pay Darrell Revis. Eventually, they're going to have to ante up for Mark Sanchez. So, you know, there are some people ahead of him on that list. So he's going to look around, and I think a team's going to want him. He's such a great player on special teams, and he can bring that wildcat option if you want to put in your offense. So, you know, again, he's going to help somebody. I don't expect it to be the Jets.
Yeah, and from what we've heard, guys, and again, it's all rumors, the salary cap will be going up about 10 to 12% this year, even though there wasn't one last year from the year before standards. He's a guy who will get paid by somebody. We're back in just a moment. Welcome back, folks. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial, and we do appreciate your tuning in. I'm Hub Arkush. Mike Wilkening is alongside, and we are now joined by Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. And Arthur, in Tennessee, there is some real trouble brewing, and nobody's talking about it. You know, remember Chris Johnson, the Pro Bowl running back, was unhappy with his contract last year after his All-World 2009. He didn't get a renegotiation, but he did get about $1.5 million of salary pushed forward, almost like an extra signing bonus. Did not play up to the 2009 numbers last year, but who could? Still had an outstanding season. And now you've got a situation where the Tennessee Titans have a rookie coach in Mike Munchak. They don't know who their quarterback's going to be, whether it's going to be Jake Locker or whether, you know, you got Kerry Collins coming back at the age of 102, you know, whatever it may be. They need Chris Johnson. It seems like he's got all the leverage in the world right now.
Well, there's no question. You hit on it. Rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, a team that wants to get off the bus running the football. You mentioned Chris Johnson wasn't quite as good last year, but he was still outstanding. Now, prior to last season, as you mentioned, to get $1.5 million pushed forward from the back end of that deal, he said at the time he was looking for $30 million guaranteed. He also said that that was going to be a one-time deal in terms of taking that $1.5 million. So he said all the right things this offseason. He went to the player-organized workout, said he wasn't going to talk about his deal. He just wanted to be with his teammates. But our sources in Nashville are saying that he is very likely to hold out. And as you mentioned, it sounds like he's got all the leverage he needs.
Arthur, a couple of Titans' key defensive players and youngsters, young veterans, I guess we'll call them, middle linebacker Stephen Tulloch and defensive end Jacob Ford, you're hearing that given the opportunity to leave via free agency, that the Titans may be waving goodbye to him?
That's correct. Stephen Tulloch, I believe, has been unhappy about his contract for a while, and I think that he thinks his value is a little greater than it is around the league and even with the Titans. So we're hearing that he is expected to move on. In the case of Jacob Ford, he's an undersized defensive end. That's exactly what new coordinator Jerry Gray is trying to get away from. They're going to focus their attention after, of course, getting CJ locked up on offensive guard Leroy Harris and fullback Amard Hall. We hear those are the two likely guys to re-sign.
Mike, the Pittsburgh Steelers' success obviously spins around quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. He's the epitome of a franchise quarterback. A lot of talk late last season and into the playoffs about a foot injury. It was called a broken foot by the Pittsburgh Star Tribune, you know, and some question. I'm sorry, Tribune Review, and various questions about how bad the injury really was. He did play through it. Now, Roethlisberger tells the Tribune Review that the doctors chose to do nothing about it because it's more about scar tissue around an old injury, but should it act up again, he will almost certainly need to have surgery. Why would you wait until almost time to training camp to have surgery if it's an option at all? Because if it happens, obviously he's going to miss a big chunk of the season.
I think what we have, guys, here is a situation where Roethlisberger, as he said in the interview with the Tribune Review, talked to his doctors. They decided the most prudent course of action at this point was not having surgery. It was an injury that he played on last year. I think what Roethlisberger said with regards to the prospect of surgery would be if it were something that bothered him down the road. But it was something he played with last year. And he has said in this interview with the Tribune Review that everything worked out well, that the injury was fine and that he was getting some rest and all those things. I tend to think that this is something that it's never a great thing when your franchise quarterback has a foot injury, but in terms of foot injuries, this probably isn't the worst type of one you can have, and it seems to be one he can play with.
All right, Arthur, I want to come back to you and the Indianapolis Colts, certainly a team that some people still think can threaten the Steelers as AFC champs, or defending AFC champs. A lot was made about Bill Polian during the pre-draft period, bringing in Andy Dalton and Colin Kaepernick, and yet they went elsewhere. The Colts chose not to draft a young quarterback. Peyton Manning has had neck surgery during the offseason. He's in his mid-30s. basically all you got is Curtis Painter. You don't think that the Colts are going to bring in a veteran quarterback. So, I mean, do they really have faith in Curtis Painter?
Well, it's a great question. And entering his third season, Curtis Painter hasn't, granted, he hasn't had a chance to show a whole lot, but in his limited sample size, he really hasn't done much that has been too overwhelming or been anything to get too excited about. So we're hearing that this is going to be a big year for Curtis Painter. Now, the Colts will generally bring in a couple undrafted free agent quarterbacks to compete with him. We expect that to be the case again this summer. And what they like about Painter is his knowledge of the playbook. He's a smart kid. He's not the most talented or the most gifted football player, but he's always well prepared. So they like that aspect of it. But at the same time, it's kind of alarming the numbers he's put up even in the preseason against second and third string defenses. So we hear this is a critical season that Curtis Painter's entering.
Arthur, one other story with the Colts. We understand that Bill Polian really likes a couple of his young linebackers. Pat Angerer and Cavell Connor both played well the second half of the season last year. Angerer pretty much all year long, and he moved inside and outside. Clint Session is a free agent, and when you look at the Colts' situation of really wanting to re-sign Joseph Addai and Melvin Bullitt, and you look at these kids, as productive as Session has been for him, we know the Colts don't like paying a lot of money to linebackers, and it looks like he's somebody who could find himself on the open market.
Yeah, I think that might be the case. You hit on it. Cavell Connor in particular, Bill Polian just raved about after the season. He actually compared him favorably to another one of his favorites, David Thornton, who was coincidentally allowed to leave in free agency. So we're hearing Clint Session, good football player. A lot of teams are going to, you know, will have a use for him, but he could be on the way out because of these young and emerging kids.
Another undersized Colts linebacker hits the free agent market. We'll keep an eye on that story. And we've got a lot more Way We Hear It coming up. Associate Editor Eli Cabrin joins us in a minute with the AFC West. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkus, and it's now my pleasure to welcome in Associate Editor Eli Cabrin. And Eli covers the AFC West. And interesting story out in Kansas City, Eli. We hear so much about these players who get offered franchise tags in part because they're too valuable to let go, and yet teams don't want to give them long-term money or think they'll be too expensive to sign. Yet the Chiefs have a young outside linebacker in Tom Bahali who's adjusted really nicely to Romeo Crennel's 3-4 defense, and they put a franchise tag on him late last season, but you're hearing that they would much prefer to get a long-term deal done with this kid.
Yeah, Ali led the AFC in sacks last year, and it seems like they want to lock him up to a long-term deal. I talked to his agent, and he said that when the lockout ends, they're going to try to work out something. But it's expected that the Chiefs are going to be under the salary cap basement, per se, about what the minimum they have to spend to meet the NFL's rules. So they're going to have to add more salary, and since they need to get Ali a long-term deal anyways, this may be the perfect time to do it.
Eli, one other story in Kansas City I want to get your take on. I know you had a chance to talk with Scott Pioli, the GM there. Scott's been a good friend of Pro Football Weekly, as well as outside linebacker Andy Studebaker, about a really rare occurrence this offseason. The Kansas City Chiefs, front office coaches, and players alike were granted a special exception for over 120 members of the organization, including 20-plus players, to travel to Joplin, Missouri to do some much-needed cleanup work. What did they have to tell you about that?
They said it was an extraordinary experience. I mean, the people in Joplin have been through so much in the last month. A level 5 tornado with storms over 200 miles an hour came through Joplin in late May, and the highest death count for a natural disaster of that type of a tornado in over 60 years in the United States. So that town is really in shambles. And the Chiefs came together with management, with coaches, with players, all came together to Joplin to help rebuild. And both Pioli and Studebaker said that it was just an amazing experience talking with Chiefs fans there and trying to get their life back on track, cleaning up debris, all sorts of stuff. They both said it was a real powerful day.
Eli, thank you. And hold on, I've got another club I want to talk to you about. But, I mean, that's the kind of story, guys, that we're just not hearing enough about this offseason. And hats off to the NFL for making an exception to their lockout rules and the Kansas City Chiefs for doing some much-needed work there. Wilkie, I don't really need to hear about T.O. again, but, you know, we're going to. And a fascinating week, as it's been reported that T.O. tore an ACL in one of his knees. We're not sure which. His agent, Drew Rosenhaus, who's never met a microphone he doesn't like, has confirmed that he, in fact, did have a knee procedure. Hasn't, I think, confirmed an ACL, but we believe that's what it was. We don't know exactly when the surgery was, but we believe it was in April. Rosenhaus saying that T.O. is not going to retire and that he expects to play this year and that it's a slam dunk. But the simple reality is if he had ACL surgery in April, he is not going to be a factor in the NFL as a 37-year-old wide receiver this year.
I think it's the readiness to play for Terrell Owens in terms of how quickly he can recover and the number of teams that would be interested. I think it's going to be intriguing to see if he does draw some interest. But you're right, Hub. The age and the injury, whenever it occurred, the timing, both those things work against Terrell Owens, I think, at this stage of his career. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of it and to see if he lands on a team in 2011. It seems like there's a couple strikes that might be working against him in terms of doing that in a timely manner.
Well, and let me be clear, guys. I happen to be a Drew Rosenhaus fan. I think he does a great job for his clients. But, you know, one of the things about Drew is if he says it's black, there's a good chance it's white. And so we have to assume that there's a lot more than what we're hearing here. Real quickly, Eli, I want to talk to you about the Oakland Raiders. I think everybody is pretty much accepted as a done deal. Nnamdi Asamoah is not going to be back. We know Robert Gallery is not going to be back. Free safety Michael Huff will probably move on. But the Raiders have made a priority out of re-signing tight end Zach Miller and running back Michael Bush, and yet now not so sure that they're going to get those deals done either.
Yeah, those are their top priorities heading into the free agency whenever that does start. But they're also not sure about the salary cap. They invested a lot of money before the lockout began in guys like Stanford Rout and Richard Seymour, big money contracts, and now they're not really sure where they stand in terms of the salary cap because we don't really know what the cap is. But we were told that Zach Miller is the number one priority. He's their best pass catcher, and they'd like to get Michael Bush back as a change of pace for Darren McFadden, but they're not really sure exactly how much money those guys are looking for at this time.
Eli, thank you very much, guys. We're out of time on Way We Hear It, but we do still have the Publisher's Pen ahead. We're back with more on Pro Football Weekly right around the corner.
The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Mike, thank you very much. And you know, folks, I kind of hate the fact that it may seem like my job over the last few weeks has been to come along and rain on people's parade as we hear about all the new optimism that a new collective bargaining agreement is right around the corner. And so I want to specify as clearly as I can, according to my best sources and most of our sources at Pro Football Weekly, we are confident that there's going to be a 2011 NFL season, and we do believe it's going to be a 16-game season. But what we're hearing is that this deal that everybody hoped for, possibly by July 1st, by July 4th. Well, hell, guys, it's July 3rd or 4th, and you're hearing the show, and there is no deal going to happen today. And the bottom line, which I find disconcerting, is the way that media and fans alike jumped on this news out of the owners' meetings in Rosemont, Illinois last week, that there was this new offer on the table that had them close, and yet the players hadn't even seen the offer yet. What you have to understand is that the Chief Magistrate Judge Arthur Boylan has had a gag order on negotiations, and it's been a good thing. The owners used their meetings as a chance to do a little propaganda work and to make us believe that there was positive momentum, that they were close to a deal when the players hadn't even seen it yet. It is good that both sides are talking and that the commissioner and the head of the Players Association are flying around the country together. But unfortunately, guys, the deal is still at least several weeks away. That'll do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks to Randy Meyer, our outstanding engineer and producer. Syndication Network is our home studio. And most of all, our thanks to all of you. Thanks for listening. Join us next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.